Well, pleasant good afternoon to everybody. To be or not to be? That is the question. Well, that isn't really the question. That was William's question from a few years ago. I would like to add two more words to that and make that be the question for now. To be or not to be a Cretan? That is the question. A Cretan, you say? Not a crouton, a Cretan. A Cretan is a person from Crete. So Crete, island south of Greece, a Cretan, C-R-E-T-A-N, would be a person from Crete. So the question is, do you think it's positive or negative, or somewhere in between, to be referred to or thought of as a person from Crete? What if you are from Crete? Is that good or bad? Well, let's talk this through. Many of you old-timers might already be thinking, well, there's a scripture. So let's start at the scripture that talks directly about people from Crete, and then we'll expand from there. So please turn to Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1, verse 12. For context, you can start in verse 5 where it says, "For this reason I left you in Crete." So this is Paul talking to Titus. "I left you in Crete," and here's some things to look for leadership considerations. But then down in verse 12, it says, "One of them, a prophet of their own." So this is referring to a gentleman named Epimenides. I actually practiced that a few times, and I still didn't get it. So it's E-P-I-M-E-N-I-D-E-S. I'll try to not say his name again, but he is that poet or prophet from Crete. So it says that this poet, he said, "Cretans are always liars." Doesn't sound so good, right? Depending on your translation, they're wild beasts, and then also slow bellies. So doesn't seem so good so far. So let's talk through each of these terms and then we'll expand it. So first of all, they're always liars. Now, all generalities are wrong all the time, sometimes. But thinking this through, the Benson commentary shares that to Cretanize is synonymous with to deceive. Just as to Corinthianize is immorality, to lie like a Cretan is a quote from Plutarch. For those that have started college again, and welcome to the ABC class, there's a logic circle that's tied to this. And I will say the name one more time, or at least try to, the Epimenides paradox. So it goes like this. If all Cretans are liars, but the person that's saying this is a Cretan, therefore he himself is a liar. But if he's a liar, and what he says is untrue, and he says that all Cretans are liars, then Cretans must be truthful. So you can kind of start to go in circles. If Epimenides is a Cretan, therefore what he says is true, that then Cretans are liars. He's a liar, what he says is untrue, and you can just go around and around proving that either he's truthful or untruthful. Cretans lie or they don't lie, and it's just a circular argument for those that would be in a logic class. So the first part that we can easily agree with is lying is bad. Cretans are known to lie. That is a negative. That's strike one from the Cretan's perspective. What about slow bellies? That is not a code word for an old school fast break, but a slow belly is a lazy glutton, and that's also bad. So that's a problem. The third part, though, is where it starts to get a little bit interesting. Savage animals, evil, wild beasts. The Message translates it barking dogs. Jameson Fawcett Brown points out that Crete is an island without wild beasts. There's no lions, there's no tigers, there's no bears. There's no wild beasts there. But a sarcasm from this poet is that instead of wild beasts, it's really the people that have a wild, a savage, kind of an untamed edge. So far, scripturally, I would say it would be negative to be compared to a Cretan in that they're liars, they're wild, evil beasts, slow bellies, lazy gluttons. But I read a story about 2 months ago that was fascinating to me, and I'd like to share that. And then we'll come back to this idea about the wild beast part, that there could be a part of that that could be turned to a positive from a Christian perspective. So the story is, there's a book called Natural Born Heroes, and it talks about World War II. So we'll take a little two-minute digression, and then we'll come back to wrap up the sermonette deeper on that topic. So the question is, and you should be able to guess this fairly easily, who did Hitler, von Rundstedt, and Jodl, so these are some of the German generals, and then Hitler himself, blame on losing World War II. Could blame a lot of things. I didn't realize Crete could have been one of those answers, and it was. Why would they blame Crete on the loss of World War II? Well, if you think about in 1941, so up to this point, Germany had annexed Austria. They had picked up Czechoslovakia and Poland. They had then picked up France, and they had the choice of, do we continue to go to England, or do we turn and open up a second front that they called Barbarossa to then go into Russia? So Hitler decided he wanted to open up the second front. But while he was making those plans, they were planning to then go into Russia in May, Hitler's friend, Mussolini, decided that he wanted to pick up some of his own territory. So he went and attacked from Italy. He attacked Greece. Greece was tough. Not only could the Italians not conquer Greece, they actually lost ground. So they tried to get into Greece, and Greece counterattacked, took more land. So now all of a sudden, Hitler, before he goes to Russia, says, I can either do that or I can go help out my compadre and go attack Greece so that we don't lose that land and try to keep more of a united front there. So Hitler chose, instead of attacking Russia in mid-May, he chose to go attack Greece. And it took about 6 weeks' worth of effort for Greece and then Crete. And at the very end, when he finally attacked Russia, they hit the Russian winter. They got as close. They could see the Nazis could see the outline of Moscow. And that was when the Russian winter shut down the operation. So the delay of going to Crete, Greece, and then Crete that we'll share here momentarily, is why Hitler and some of his generals blamed the loss of World War II. But let's talk a little bit more specifically about Crete. There's two parts of this that I found interesting. Germany wasn't sure how they were going to attack Crete. So they, for the very first time in a war, had paratroopers. They attacked with 10,000 paratroopers. They flew the planes at night, dropped the paratroopers over. This is the first time that the Nazis were actually faced by civilian resistance. Men, women, children, they didn't have a lot of weapons. They attacked them with hose and knives. So paratroopers coming out of the sky, being attacked by the local villagers, and took about 40% of the 10,000 airborne soldiers out of operation, and they almost held on to Crete for a while. But so to me, that's interesting, but that wasn't really the story about natural born heroes. So that just set up the story. And the story was that once Germany conquered Crete, they took a third of their armor and a third of their air force, by the way, and that's also what slowed down Russia. But as a part of that, the Nazi general for Crete, his nickname was the Butcher, General Mueller, and the partisans from the Greek resistance were gathering, and they're like, we've got to find a way to stop this guy. He's literally killing us. He's wiping out our villages. What can we do? And they came up with a strategy that they didn't want to say, well, we could try to find a way to kill him, but we'd like to find a way to capture him. And if we could capture him and take him away, that's going to create so much fear among the Nazis. That's what we want to do. So they came up with a plan that as he was driving north in his general's car south from Heraklion, the main port city, to Knossos, the partisans jumped out of the bushes. They had a stop sign. They captured his car. They took him out. They put him in the back seat. And then he was known for being so rude. They put him back in the car, turned around, and they took him for 90 minutes through 22 different Nazi checkpoints. And at each checkpoint, they would say stop, and he would just honk his horn to keep going. They would pretend that they had the general because the partisan put his hat on, ran through all the stoplights, all the stops, and looked like they were going to disappear. They tried to pretend like they were going to go through a submarine to the north. They ended up climbing over the mountains, and then that's how they escaped. So the only general captured in World War II was the Nazi general. His name was General Kreip. They took him out to Egypt, and he was then a POW in Canada. So the story is just fascinating if anybody enjoys that part of history. But what I didn't realize was just the bravery or the courage that was shown by those people on Crete as a part of withstanding or trying to weather the airborne invasion, and then as a part of managing through the very difficult time with the Nazis. So the idea that the island of Crete has no wild beasts, except maybe some of the people there could be considered that, true. But I would also then consider, from a Christian perspective, Cretans aren't all bad. All generalities aren't always accurate. So the thought would be what we can learn from Cretans and something that would be a positive characteristic for us as Christians, I would propose, is Cretan courage. So Cretans are very courageous people, and the story of natural-born heroes really proved that out. I like the quote from Plato that says, courage is knowing what not to fear. All of us have fears of one thing or another. Christians have some fears, but we need to be courageous no matter what our trials, no matter what our challenges are. Now, in the New Testament, there's not really a specific commandment saying Christians need to be courageous. Paul is told to take courage. There are a few moments and certainly many examples, but as far as it's not a fruit of the Spirit, but I think we would all agree it's not a bad thing. But let's look at this from a different perspective. So please turn to Revelation 21 and verse 8. Revelation 21 and verse 8. It starts in verse 7 where it says, he who overcomes shall inherit all things. I will be his God. He will be my son. And now here comes a list of things that we're not supposed to have as Christians. Surprisingly, look at the very first thing, the cowardly. And then it ends up with the group of this list shall have their part in the lake of fire. Well, are any of us cowards? I would think at times we all go through different things. How many people like spiders? Well, that doesn't necessarily, it's not a bad thing to be afraid of a spider. I'm afraid of heights. Does that mean that I'm in trouble now? I don't think from a heights perspective. But so this word coward, the Greek word, it's 1169 in the Greek, and it's called deilos, D-E-I-L-O-S. It means excessive fear. It means losing out because you're faint-hearted, timid. And it really is talking in context about choosing to take a stand for Christ. But I think what will really amplify this, so this word deilos is only in the New Testament a couple of times. But one place that it's listed that will really amplify, and this will be the closing scripture, is in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. So in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7, so it says, God has not given us the spirit of delos. In that case, it's actually the noun is called delia, so similar. But God does not give us the spirit of fear or being a coward or being timid, but of power and of love and of a strong mind. So the antidote to being a coward, the importance of being courageous as a Christian, is from the Spirit of God. It's not a spirit of fear, but it's a spirit of power, dynamite, and of love, and of a sound mind. Another book I was reading recently is The Five Love Languages, again. And it's an interesting book. If you haven't read it, I would encourage it. But one of the love languages is focusing on affirmation, encouraging words. And it talks about how encouragement, to encourage is to inspire with courage. So as Christians, we should strive to be courageous ourselves, but we should strive to encourage others. And to encourage others, it's actually then inspiring them with courage. And one of the quotes in the Love Languages book says, most of us have more potential than we ever develop. Often, what is holding us back is courage. So the concluding thoughts here are, how can we apply and what can we think about courage as a Christian in our everyday life? There's a website that I found, an entity, it's called Rising Strong, Everyday Acts of Courage. And here are a few things that take courage for us as Christians that we might just consider. An apology, that takes courage. Say I'm sorry, say I'm wrong. Maybe it's a Cretan type courage. It's a strong type courage. Being yourself. Talks about not imitating others, taking off your mask, being real. That takes courage. Taking responsibility. You are where you are because of the choices you have made, is the quote there. If you don't like it, change it. I like the quote from a sales perspective, we win, I lose. And if you think about it from a responsibility perspective, if you ever have success, if something happens well, look around you for the we. And think about who can I thank as a part of this. If there's a challenge, if there's a loss, being responsible, being courageous, I lost. What can I do to figure out how to do better next time? Other items that could take courage, rocking the boat, being willing to speak up and make a difference, following your dreams and asking for help. So if you'd like more information, do a search for Rising Strong, Everyday Acts of Courage. There's quite the list there. But just from a Christian perspective, I would propose that it's important for us to, number one, not be cowardly, but more importantly, to have courage and to place courage in our everyday life. So to go back to the beginning question, to be or not to be a Cretan, is that positive or negative? Scripturally, negative to be a Cretan. Quoting the poet, that they're always lying, slow bellies, and wild beasts, not good. But if you take that wild beast or the savage part or that strength of the Cretans, if you think about this from the perspective of that book, Natural Born Heroes, there's a courage that they have and that can be applied that can really benefit us as Christians in our everyday life.